This is Meredith Sisko for These Ozark Hills. Wow, it's April. Come she will. A month when we could reasonably be expected to talk about spring or the too abundant rainfall, or a couple days ago, April Fool's Day. But not this year. This year, it's impossible to talk of anything except our sudden and catastrophic entry into a sobering new world of contagion, in which courage is demanded and bravery pressed upon us. This new virus has entered our lives at a speed way faster than a speeding bullet and far more lethal. Our response could have been swifter and wiser, for sure. But for most of us, the facts of it were simply unbelievable. The response of the whole world's people, including our own, mirrors that of the inexplicable reaction of an individual of any smaller species to a charging grizzly bear. That is, to stand and stare, paralyzed, and do nothing. Because in your mind, what your eyes are seeing, your brain says can't be possible. It can't be happening. Until it is. And the time to escape is long past. No special effects here. This monster is invisible, passed one to another before they even know of its presence. A true planet-wide catastrophe. There's no question, given its worldwide spread, that we're all in this together. But we're suspicious people in the Ozarks. We have an instinctive suspicion of those who know what's best for us. We've learned to be suspicious of the outsider, the stranger, those folks, for instance, who came in saying, "I'm from the government, I'm here to help you," and then brought us kudzu and multiflora rose. But when we're threatened, we stand up and we stand together. And that's another problem when it comes to this enemy. This time we mustn't stand together. We must shelter in place, practice social distancing, and self-isolate. And that's a hard thing to ask, because we know from experience that isolation is hard. We know that from our earliest times here, when folks out in these hills and hollers would attend a barn raising, a hog killing, a baptizing, and sometimes even a hanging, just for the chance to be with someone, to break the silence, the loneliness, the despair of life in isolation. But here it is. I learned long ago from a wise person, a minister by trade and by conscience, who died too soon, but he taught me that when a thing can't be changed in its circumstance, it can be changed a little by the way you look at it. If you see it differently, it becomes different to you. So with that thought, I'd like to suggest a small change, an adjustment in our language around this, so as to go from talking about isolation to considering solitude. It's a harder state to achieve and harder still to maintain, but where in isolation there can be despair, in solitude there's a blessed quiet, a time of rest and restoration, a time to contemplate one's life as a series of lessons, lifelong learning and spiritual growth, instead of just a string of disappointments, failures, and regrets. We're all prone to that at times, feeling low and spending the wee hours cataloging every single mistake, every tiny misstep. Well, we don't have time for that. Any more than we have time to lay blame or strike back at the invisible enemy. After all, we don't know how this happened. We think it first appeared, we think, in a province in China. But we don't know that for sure. We've spent a whole century blaming the Spanish flu on Spain, when in fact we proved a long time ago that Spain wasn't the culprit. Current theories on its likely origin point to France, China, Britain, or us, the United States. After all, the first known case was reported at Fort Riley, Kansas. Kansas? We have to be smarter than that. This isn't partisan. It isn't political. It isn't time to draw some arbitrary line in the sand so we can take sides and fight over it. The virus doesn't care what we think. It doesn't care that it's killing us, even though by killing us, it's destroying its own host, the only place it can live. Well, in that way, in a rather horrible way, it's a little bit like us. We've been doing that too for centuries, conjuring up and participating in things that would destroy our own planet. Well, we're not doing that so much now. The skies here and in China and planet-wide are remarkably clear with all those polluting industries shutting down. With us off the streets, our streets are cleaner, our water is clearer, our... Well, I could go on. But that's a subject one might take up in solitude, the notion that what we do matters, that unlike a mindless organism, we have the ability to make choices, to endure solitude simply to avoid the risk to ourselves and others, and maybe in the meantime, to spend a moment or two evaluating our lives and what they mean to us, what our families and our neighbors mean to us, what it means to be just one large family. You know, genetic research has proved beyond a doubt that what we perceived as different races is just tiny, tiny fragments of DNA that determine skin pigment and a few other minor details. We really are just one race. It's called human. None of us is more, not more special, more equal, more worthy, and no one of us is less. When others die, next door or in some other state or on the other side of the world, we have lost family. So we can look at the coming days and weeks of self-quarantine as solitude or a solitary confinement. We can choose to be alone in the dark, or we can choose to see this experience as an opportunity to spend some time in contemplation, physically apart, but always in the embrace of that larger family, an embrace that holds us every one from the deepest heart of these Ozark Hills to the farthest reaches of our souls. We can do this. Yes, we can.
I open my heart and drink my fill of the rich, deep current of life always running through.